WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Monday, November 2, 2016. That's right. It is the week of Thanksgiving. I can already smell the turkey and ham and collard greens and macaroni and cheese. I mean, I'm getting myself hungry right now, and I haven't even eaten today. All right, so let me slow down. We still got some days before the Thanksgiving holiday, but we plan on prepping you guys for the weekend that will be very soon by recapping the weekend that was. It was a busy one, folks. The Detroit Lions, with yet another come-from-behind win in the fourth quarter, this time against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll talk about that. We will also give you an update on the latest Associated Press college football rankings. And, of course, we'll talk about the Michigan State and Ohio State college football game that occurred on Saturday afternoon at Spartan Stadium, the final home game of the year. MSU now with just one game left in the season. Of course, they aren't bowl eligible and won't be after this weekend. They will travel to Penn State, but they almost knocked off the number 2 college football team in the nation. So we'll chat about that. We will also talk about a wild finish last night at the Breslin Center as Michigan State barely escaped with a win over Dunk City. That's right, Florida Gulf Coast University. And we will also invite Deshaun Tate, college basketball reporter, producer, and columnist for CBS Radio, to break down what exactly occurred on that last play, okay? Because it's controversial, to say the least, and we'll explain why. And on the back end of the show, we will have weekend winners for you. All right, if you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start with the MSU men's basketball team. The number 13 Spartans won their second straight game after starting the year 0-2 when they narrowly took down Florida Gulf Coast 78-77 last night at the Brez. Now, the Spartans scoring was led by senior guard Aaron Harris, who had 31 points. That included 6 3-pointers. He was 6 of 6 from behind the arc. Freshman Miles Bridges added 13 for the Spartans and shot 51% from the floor. Also, the Spartans head to the Bahamas now for their next 3 games and will look to continue their win streak this Wednesday against St. John's. But that game last night ended a bit controversial, to say the least. All right, again, Florida Gulf Coast falling by just 1 point. The final play is what everyone is talking about, and we'll elaborate on why later on in the hour, but we'll have more discussion on that game. The number 21 MSU women's basketball team pulled out a close win on Friday night when they defeated Western Michigan in overtime, 68-64. The winning shot came with just 1:54 left in OT. Freshie guard and East Lansing product Taryn McCutcheon made a 3-pointer to give the Spartans the dub. In the fourth quarter, the Spartans trailed the Broncos 58-53 with 1:21 left in the game. Senior guard Tori Jankowska scored 5 straight points to tie the score and send the game into overtime. Jankowska ended the game with a team-high 17 points and her first double-double of the season. With the win, the Spartans improved to 4-0 for the second straight year, and they will look to keep that win streak alive at Oregon tomorrow night at 11 p.m. And a stat that keeps blowing my mind every time I think about it, with Tori Jankowska leading the team in buckets on Friday night in that win, MSU is 23-2 when she is the leading scorer for the squad. Blows my mind when I think about that. Tori, keep on balling. MSU Wrestling hosted the Michigan State Open yesterday at Jennison Fieldhouse. MSU managed 2 event wins out of the 12 medal winners. The wins came from redshirt junior Javier Gasca at 141 pounds and freshman Drew Hughes at 165. The Spartans also had a second-place finish with sophomore Jacob Cooper at 285. MSU will compete in its first one-on-one match on Saturday in Pennsylvania, taking on Bloomsburg University at 12:30 p.m. The number 13 MSU women's volleyball team had a tough start to their four-match road trip, losing both their Thursday match against Minnesota and its Friday match against Wisconsin. Now, on Thursday against Minnesota, the Spartans rallied back from a 2-0 deficit to just fall short in extra points in the fifth frame. Now, Friday against Wisconsin was not as close, as the Spartans fell 3-0. MSU now sits at 23-7 and 12-6 in the Big Ten Conference. They will look to get their first win of the four-game road trip when they take on in-state rivals U of M on Wednesday at 7 p.m. The top four remain the same in the latest batch of College Football Associated Press poll, with Alabama sitting atop the standings, followed by Ohio State, Michigan, and Clemson. The biggest jump near the top saw last week's number 7 Wisconsin jump to number 6, jump number 6 Washington, into the fifth spot after Louisville was dismantled by Houston last week on Thursday. Now, Penn State remained number 8 in the poll, and undefeated Western Michigan stayed at number 14. More on college football in just a flash. The Detroit Lions stayed atop the NFC North, actually tied with Minnesota Vikings, with a 26-19 defeat of the Jacksonville Jaguars yesterday. On a day the offense struggled, the Lions got a pick six and a kickoff return for a touchdown to produce points. Now, Detroit rushed for just 14 yards on the day, and the Lions' streak of trailing every game in the fourth quarter this year continued. The offense finally produced their first TD of the day with 10 minutes left in the fourth, when tight end Eric Ebron ran a jet sweep. Yeah, a tight end running a jet sweep, folks, into the end zone. The Lions will look to separate themselves in the division when they face off against the Minnesota Vikings on Thanksgiving Day. Yes, two teams with identical 6-4 records atop the NFC North. A game with a ton of implications if the Lions can pull it off. Again, the Lions have beaten the Vikings once this year. All right, scores of just 5 goals in their last 4 games. The Detroit Red Wings fell for a 4th straight time last night, this time 3-2, lost to Calgary. Tomas Tatar found the net early, but Calgary answered in the second to take the game to the third period even. Now, Calgary took their first lead, 2:31 in, but Mantha equalized for the Wings. Now, Michael Backlund, he scored to give the Flames a lead for good with just under 8 minutes to go in the game, giving Detroit their 4th straight loss. Now, they can look for a win when they travel to Buffalo on Thursday. We'll see, though. Don't hold your breath. The Wings are in a bit of a rut right now. And last but not least, the Detroit Pistons come into tonight's game against the Houston Rockets, losers of 3 straight, while the Rockets come in on a 2-game win streak. The Pistons will need to key in on stopping James Harden, who has led the Rockets in scoring in 7 of their 8 wins this year and has led the team in assists in every game this season. The game tips off at the Palace of Auburn Hills at 7:30 p.m. And also, we have 2 local teams in the running that have booked a ticket to Ford Field competing for a state championship in high school football. How about this? A big hats off and a congratulations to Pawama Westphalia, as well as Jackson Lumen Christie. Big stuff. PW in D7 and Jackson Lumen Christie in D6. Big games for both of those squads on Saturday afternoon. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in if you want to be a part of the show. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. So much to get to, so little time. Here we go. victories are like ghosts. Some believe in them and some don't. Well, if you're the Michigan State football team, you'll take a dub in any way possible at this point in the year. You're unranked and push the number two college football team to a one-point game? Pretty crazy, right? Well, Mark D'Antonio, head coach of the Michigan State football team, has another saying that really puts in perspective this season.
It's just like that old adage. Sometimes, you know, you're not as far as you think you are, as good as you think you are. Other times, you're not quite as bad as you think you are. And the inches really separate the two. And that's the story of our season right now. The inches have separated us in numerous opportunities that we've had.
Well, I mean, like you said, there's no moral victories. We won around here. We're champions. And so in our mind, you know, we still – a bad word. We're still upset that you know, we didn't win the football game. But I understand what you're saying. At the same time,
I don't see any type of victory out of a loss. You know, you really just, you have pride that you play hard. You know, you gave it your all. But at the end of the day, you play to win. So
no gripes with MSU going for two in the fourth quarter. I mean, because if you look at it, what do you really have to lose? Now the criticism comes with the play call. Why not punch it in with L.J. Scott, your workhorse the entire afternoon? And did he want the ball? I'll let him speak for himself.
I always want the ball. I want the ball every play. But it's not an iron team, so that probably can't happen.
Coach said prior to the series, we knew we were going to go for two. When we got down there, had a couple options. Tried to get the ball to Josiah, who we thought we were trying to get to, one of our better players, and didn't work out.
Boy, welcome to this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. That's a 70s hit right there. Spank! And I thought a lot of people really believed that MSU was going to get spanked this Saturday against Ohio State. That didn't happen, though. It did not happen. Quite the opposite, in fact. MSU pushing the Ohio State Buckeyes to the brink of a possible upset on Saturday afternoon in the final home game of the year for the Spartans, a 17-16 loss for Michigan State. In a game where Michigan State, I mean, just imagine if Michigan State would have converted on that two-point conversion attempt. I mean, that it would have really got hot. Okay, it was a cold day at Spartan Stadium, but it would have really got hot in that atmosphere. My goodness, that was a fun game to watch, though, I must say. A very entertaining game for the Spartans. But nonetheless, a loss is a loss. And now MSU can only hope to end the year on a win. Trying to do so on the road against Penn State this weekend, things are very intriguing in the Big Ten East, folks. It really is. Heck, in the entire conference in general. Because now, you know, you have this three-team race in the Big Ten East. And, of course, Ohio State will take on Michigan in what is being promoted and talked about as the biggest college football game of the year. I'm really looking forward to watching that game because the hype that this game has accrued Saturday after Saturday after Saturday has been just completely off the charts. You have 2-7-1 teams trying to book a ticket to Indy. But Penn State, a team that really – Not a lot of people expected to even be in contention, especially with all the talk we heard about, you know, James Franklin, his job in jeopardy, on the hot seat, and Penn State has been lights out. One loss this year, in the Big Ten Conference, 9-2 overall for the Nittany Lions. And Penn State, we possibly could see Penn State at Lucas Oil in Indy per two scenarios. Well, ideally one scenario. And that scenario being if Penn State handles business and beats Michigan State, and if Ohio State tops Michigan at the Shoe, yeah, Penn State could possibly represent the Big Ten East in Indianapolis. How crazy is that to fathom, right? Before we talk about the conference implications and who can possibly make that dance out in Indy for the Big Ten Championship, well, let's just go back to the Michigan State and Ohio State game, because I really thought that Michigan State, again, there's no such thing as moral victories. As you heard in my post-game report there, which you guys can see via WKAR.org, there is no such thing. And I don't believe in moral victories. I'm one of those guys. Some think that, hey, you know, those who really look at the glasses half full, you know, they certainly believe in moral victories and say, hey, there's always something positive you can take away from a win, of course, and a loss. But for me, a win is a win and a loss is a loss. However, when evaluating how this year has gone for Michigan State, a team that is 1-7 in the Big Ten, 3-8 overall, 3-7 heading into this game, to fathom that the Spartans pushed the Ohio State Buckeyes, the number two team in the nation, to a possible upset, a one-point loss at the hands of the Buckeyes. It's pretty impressive if you ask me. And it kind of, you know, when I left the stadium on Saturday, kind of left me thinking. I mean, just imagine if Michigan State would have played like that throughout this year. I guarantee the overall record will not be 3-8. For sure, folks. Now, there's a couple of reasons, well, multiple reasons, for Michigan State pushing JT Barrett and company to a heck of a game. Number one being LJ Scott. I mean, in a balanced attack overall for MSU, LJ Scott was fabulous. And he has been pretty good all year, if you ask me. LJ Scott ran for a career-high 160 yards. He averaged almost 9 yards per carry, 19 attempts. He had an 8-carry, 56-yard TD drive all on his own in the fourth to give MSU a chance to tie or to take the lead. And, hey, Scott also showed us he can make some magic happen when it comes to receiving the football as well. 2 catches for 76 yards, including, of course, that 64-yard screen pass that led for a TD on the game's second play. LJ Scott balled out of control on Saturday, folks. And it was an interesting moment, which actually, I didn't realize that we got on camera until I went back and looked at the footage. But our own Isaac Constance, engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, you had a great shot, Isaac, which I used in the report, of LJ Scott and head coach Urban Meyer embracing one another after that game. Now, we all know the backdrop to that story, right? LJ Scott being from Hubbard, Ohio. Ohio State tried to recruit LJ late in his high school career, but they were, unfortunately for them, too late because Michigan State already had to jump on him. Urban Meyer wanted LJ Scott, though. And if you look at the raw footage we shot, you can hear some of it in the postgame report, but I'm kind of talking over it. But if you look at the raw footage we shot, of that moment, Isaac, I mean, you can hear Urban Meyer, because I cranked the audio all the way up on my speakers, and you could kind of hear Urban Meyer, you know, talking to LJ and saying in his ear, man, you are fast. You know what I mean? like complimenting him about his game, which I thought was a very cool moment. Kudos to you, my friend. That was a heck of a shot, by the way.
Well, and when I saw that, I knew I had to get it, because it did come down to those two schools clashing over the commitment of LJ Scott. And yeah, you can see why. Not that they got the short end of the stick with Mike Weber. He was unbelievable, and he's a freshman. Come on.
Oh, man, but Mike Weber is going to be so good for that program.
Yeah. The next Ezekiel Elliott, you know, if they get those back-to-back, jealousy amongst the rest of the Big Ten, safe to say. But the thing is, also, JT Barrett talking to LJ Scott after that game, you could see why he was so highly coveted, because this is a guy with such a good combination of strength and speed, really would fit any team in the Big Ten well. But against Ohio State, that's a good defense they ran all over, and you can see why Urban Meyer saw him after the game and said, you're fast, you're strong, you've got everything, because he does.
And you should have been wearing scarlet and gray.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what he said. but anyway, LJ Scott was absolutely fantastic. And you know what? It really surprised me that this Michigan State defense was able, you know, as good as Weber was, JT Barrett showed flashes as well, but that Michigan State defense held his passing yards to, what, 86 on the day, which was very, very impressive. But if you would have told me before that game that Michigan State's defense was going to hold Ohio State to just 17 points, I would have said you're crazy. I would have said you're crazy. But that defense came to play, folks. And Michigan State, I mean, two of the big storylines for that defense all year has been Michigan State's lack of takeaways and Michigan State's lack of defensive line pressure when it comes to opposing quarterbacks, all right? They entered that game with just 7 sacks on the year. Michigan State walked away from that field with 3 sacks in one game. And that's unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. And a lot of it came from great production from Michigan State's youth on that defense. We can talk about true freshman defensive tackle Mike Panishuk, who had 7 tackles and a sack himself. Sophomore defensive end Robert Bowers, who had 5 stops and a sack of his own. Sophomore walk-on Dylan Alexander. How big was Dylan Alexander, folks? He had 3 tackles, 1 for loss, and he also recovered that fumble in which freshman defensive end Austin Robertson had caused on Weber, in which Michigan State recovered. Impressive stuff. Those are young pups stepping up and saying, you know what? The season may be awry, but you know what? We're going to step up and play the number 2 team in the nation to the brink. And that's exactly what they did. That is how Michigan State was able to stay in that game throughout its entirety and make this one a ball game. Now I want to go to the other conversation here, because as you heard in my postgame report, it's one of those moments in which I understood fully. In my opinion, there's no confusion here. You are a 3-7 football team at that moment. You're not competing for a divisional crown. You're not competing to go to a college football playoff. You're not competing to go to a bowl game. It's all out the window now. And in the waning minutes of the fourth quarter, you score a TD with LJ Scott. And you're sitting there on the goal line with an opportunity to either kick an extra point and tie the game and see how it plays out, or you can live in the moment and realize that you have a golden opportunity to possibly knock off the number 2 college football team in the nation, and you can go for the win. Again, there still would have been time on the clock after that 2-point conversion. You know, and there still was time on the clock after that 2-point conversion, but you get my drift here, right? Why not go for 2? I understood D'Antonio completely. Now, the only gripe I have with it is the play call. Again, I mentioned how LJ Scott was just absolutely stunning on the day. The Ohio State Buckeyes defense did not have an answer all day as to how to slow down, let alone stop LJ Scott. 160 yards on the ground, folks. Fantastic. That's a career high for Scott, by the way. And Tyler O'Connor, he was in the end zone for an interception. I did not like that play call. Now, you heard Dave Warner, MSU offensive coordinator, in that snippet as well. The plan was actually to get the football to Josiah Price. And you saw what happened. Okay, so and why not? With LJ, the one who actually put MSU in that position with that score, you know, to be down by 1 point, why not use him in a play action at least? Use him in some way, shape, or form to bait the defense. I was very shocked that they didn't even go that route with him. So the play call was my problem, not the decision to go for 2. Now, I want to invite a man to the show who doesn't agree with that. Current sports production assistant Kamen Kessler, who does an outstanding job each and every Monday here on the show, along with Ashley Gibbert. Kamen, you have an entirely different take on this, and we encourage opinions and debate on the show. Please explain to me why you think that MSU going for 2 in that moment was the wrong call.
Well, first off, your gripe is with the play call, which I agree was a terrible play call, but I disagree with the decision as a whole. And for me, it's you got to look at how the game's played along. Your defense is playing really well. You're not in a shootout at all, and you got to look at the time on the clock and the timeout situation. There's 4:41 left. They have two timeouts. You go up by one, in no way whatsoever are you guaranteed to win that game. Do you increase your chances slightly? Yeah. More than tying up the game with the possibility of you driving down for a game-winning, you know, touchdown, field goal, or going to overtime? A little bit. When you go down 1 point and now must have your defense stop their offense and put the ball on the arm of Tyler O'Connor, who completed 6 passes all day, that's the situation you wanted there? I don't think that's the situation. And you were telling me it's a 3-7 team, you know? What do they have to lose? I hate that excuse. You're excusing a bad decision for the team not having anything to play for.
So I'm trying to dive into your mind right here and trying to just pick apart your thinking here. So the reason you think MSU should have kicked the field goal there is because you then give MSU's offense an opportunity with time left late in the fourth quarter to possibly win the game on a possible field goal, let alone a touchdown, right?
Correct. Now, let me preface that with MSU's offense on that day was who? Who have you been talking about?
LJ Scott, all day. Yeah.
And so you're saying if we go down one, we don't get this, that ball is out of LJ Scott's hand. Rest of the game. You're not running that ball.
But Kamen, MSU, as you recall, got the football back. Possibly had a drive to possibly go down and win the game on maybe a field goal because they were down by one at that point. And what happened? Tyler O'Connor throws a mindless INT and gives the ball right back to Ohio State, and all they had to do was just get in victory formation, and the game was over. Putting that ball in the hands of Tyler O'Connor and expecting him to put together a drive to win the game in the final moments is not ideal. If you're right there on the goal line and your rushing attack has been eating up this Ohio State defense all day long, why not give it to LJ Scott right there at the goal line? And I would take them chances all day as opposed to, you know, relying on MSU's defense to come up with a stop and get the football back and then having Tyler O'Connor go down the field for a possible game-winning drive. They were right there, right at the goal line, 3-7 football team. Who cares if you don't get it? Who cares if you do get it? I mean, what do you have to lose here? That's the big thing. So I totally understood where Coach D was coming from. I want to give Isaac Constance a chance to chime in right now.
Well, and what I think this all comes down to is, do you make it or not? Because I certainly see Kamen's point that you want LJ Scott with the ball at the end of the game. He's got 160 rushing yards in the affair, and the guy's been tearing up the offense. If LJ Scott has the chance to run again, likely this game is over. But that's the thing. The game's over if you have the lead. So, once again, I like the decision to go for two. I can see why you wouldn't as well. I can entirely see that maybe you want to stretch it into overtime or give yourself one more chance because the defense has been playing well, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, you go for two not thinking we're going to miss this. You go for two expecting wholeheartedly this is going to give us an 18-17 lead with a little bit over 4 minutes left, and we're going to stop them. We're going to run out the clock, and we're going to walk away with the best upset, a signature win on this season. Mm-hmm. Again, like you, Al, I take serious issue with the play call.
Oh, it was a bad play call.
You go with Tyler O'Connor, he throws into double coverage, and LJ Scott is essentially on the sideline in that play. He's as good as that. And the thing is, I don't like a humdrum, drab run up the middle, just a halfback jutting up into the defensive line. Ohio State's got a good defense. Not big on that. But do a toss. Do a screen. At least a play action like you mentioned. Something to distract the defense. Give the guy space to operate, space to work. And then I think you've got a better chance of making this a one-point game in your favor.
Yeah, I didn't understand the play call. Before we hit our first break, let's go to line one right now. We've got Dave from Wyoming that wants to chime in. Dave, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Well, I'm doing okay. Would have been doing okay or had that 2-point conversion once gone.
I'm sure.
But there are a couple things. I'll get back to the 2-point conversion, but I guess I'll go to that first. I can see why they went for it. And that being, if they were successful, then you're forcing JT Barrett, who hasn't had a great day, not anything like the first time he was at Spartan Stadium. You are forcing him to be in a place that he's not comfortable. And he hadn't been doing well all day. So you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
You're pushing him to make bad decisions. And he made several during the game. However, like you, I like the idea. I hate the play because they can't. It sort of was like Indiana redo, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they go down the field, they're beating Indiana like, you know, like rented mules. And so, hey, let's get down there and run two plays where we get sacked after they've been running at will against Indiana. And I thought the same thing there. They put the ball in O'Connor's hands, and I'm sure he's doing the best he can, but throwing the ball accurately and making quick decisions are not his two strong suits.
Not at all. Right.
And so the offensive coordinators, a good offensive coordinator, in my opinion, knows what he has and says, okay, what can we do to make this team succeed given this quarterback's strength? And they put two things that he does not do well on his shoulders to make that last play work. I would much rather seen even some kind of a sweep with Corley, because he's probably the fastest guy in the field at that point in time, or lining Corley up, streaking from left to right on some kind of a under-screen type situation where he's going to be the Dickens to catch up with instead of that bunch. But that's what might have been. My other two irritations about this, and it goes back to tinfoil hats, I guess, is I found it interesting that they called a targeting call in Michigan State on a hit that did not look as much of a target as Tyler O'Connor's first run from scrimmage, mm-hmm. when an Ohio State player nailed him in the head with his helmet. But there was no flag. The other one is, and I personally know the official who made the unsportsmanlike call when Mike Weber stuck his finger through the face mask of the Michigan State player.
Yeah, I was, you know, it was chatter up in the press box. It's so hard to see down there.
I was right there.
And you saw that happen
on TV, but I was right there, and I've known that guy. I've worked with that guy in high school games years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no way, except for brain lock, that he wouldn't have at least called a double foul on that.
Right.
And why he makes that call, and he's a former head official, and now I guess he, you know, had a different assignment this year. But how you can come up with that call and not hear any, I'll be interested to see if the Big Ten office says anything about that. I'll leave it at that. It's not why they lost the game. I'm not going to blame it on that. But there were two. Those were two interesting calls that I thought, they just weren't made one way, and then they were made the other. And I don't think there's any room for that in Big Ten football. Thanks,
Dave. Always a great call. Appreciate that. Again, folks, if you want to be a part of today's Current Sports, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You know, it's always interesting too, because you just. And being in the press box, and that's why sometimes I love, and you know how I am when I cover games. I used to do this all the time when I'm covering an MSU football game. You know, I used to like go into the press conference room where they have the broadcast and you can play and you can hear the commentators. I like watching that angle more so than the press box, because you just can't see everything being in the press box. You get that. It's cool because you get that bird's eye view of everything.
The tactical view.
Yeah, the tactical view. But as far as just the different angles in the commentary, you just don't get that. So when that play happened, the unsportsmanlike penalty happened, and it was called on both sides. I didn't know what was happening up there. I mean, I'm sitting there. I tried to look at a replay because they had the ESPN broadcast far to my left. I couldn't see what happened, but I saw on Twitter that a lot of people were talking about Mike Weber sticking his fingers in the face mask of an MSU player. Now, again, as Dave stated, that isn't the reason why MSU lost that game, but that was an interesting call in the way the refs went about that, all right? All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, I know we've got two callers on the line. We've got Tom from Grand Rapids as well as Ray from Indiana. We're going to get to you guys as well as invite our guest for today's show, Deshaun Tate, college basketball reporter, producer, and columnist for CBS Radio. He's going to dive into what occurred last night in the MSU and FGCU men's college basketball game, a controversial one, to say the least. All right, that and more. Don't go anywhere.
Donald Trump appoints men with histories of racism and anti-Islamic agendas to top posts, leaving Muslims and many minorities feeling scared and questioning what it means when he says he wants to unite all Americans.
What do you tell your kids who are being bullied because of their faith? It's a very scary time.
Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
The Takeaway, today at 3 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call if you want to weigh in on anything that we've talked about here on our airwaves. So far, we spent that first segment diving into the Michigan State and Ohio State college football game that resulted in a one-point loss by the Spartans at the hands of the Ohio State Buckeyes, the number two college football team in the land. I don't believe in moral victories, but if there is anything as such, that is a pretty good definition of it, I must say. All right, we got two callers on the line right now. Let's first go to line one. We've got Ray from Indiana on to talk some college football. Ray, what's up?
I was amazed how bad Ohio State played and how good you guys played. I tell you, if you don't get, they don't get that sack and that fumble and then he panics and throws the ball up for grab for interception, I think you beat them.
It was that, I'm telling you, just they were just a few plays away from a huge upset in the college football world. It was a great fight. And again, I mentioned, you know, that young talent of players who stepped up on Saturday afternoon. That was the most impressive adage for me when you look at that game from top to bottom, Ray.
Well, you had your defensive tackle out, too, wasn't it?
Exactly. Malik McDowell. That's what I'm saying. You know, you look at true freshman defensive tackle, Mike Panishuk. I mentioned sophomore defensive end, Robert Bowers. Sophomore walk-on, Dylan Alexander. Defensive end, who's also a freshman, Austin Robertson. All of those guys stepped up on
Saturday. All are underclassmen, too.
All are underclassmen. This is talent you're going to be seeing next year for the Spartans.
Well, Ohio State didn't make any big plays. If they play like this next week against Michigan, they're going to get beat.
Well, I tell you what, I think Ohio State is actually going to win that game. And I'll give my reasons later on this hour as to why. So that's going to be a fun game, though.
They better play better than that last game.
Yeah, and I do think, I'll say this too, I think Wilton Spade is playing this Saturday. I will say that. John O'Korn, yeah, all right. But Wilton Spade is clearly the best quarterback out of the three, and I think we'll see Wilton Spade. Now, he may not be 100%, but it will be hard-pressed to think that he won't be playing this Saturday against OSU.
Hey, my friend, did you ever call down there about Kurt Warner yet?
No, I still have not. It's on my things-to-do list, Ray. I'm looking at it right now.
We're only 2 months away from the vote, so make sure you do it by the end of January.
I got you, Ray. I got your back.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot for your time.
You got it.
Go Buckeyes. Let's hope they beat the bully.
Ray from Indiana, the one and the only. Line two, Tom from Grand Rapids. What's on your mind, Tom, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Al, thanks. Just a quick question for you or maybe a comment. I thought I've read and heard several times that if we would have finished 5-7, there was some kind of chance that we could still go to a bowl game. So I think that weighed into the fact that I just didn't like the two-point conversation or conversion. But it does get to the conversation about play calling. That's been going on all year. There's some other incidents in that game, like what the heck was that wacky play we ran with all the linemen on one side and Shelton trying to throw the ball? how many passes has he completed in his college career?
Yeah, I agree. And how about, you know, I didn't even bring up this play, the third and nine. Remember the audible?
Quarterback sneak.
Yeah, that Tyler O'Connor had. He audibled it to a QB sneak on third and nine. I think he didn't know what, you know, that it was third down. I think that was just totally mentally whiffed on that play. So, there were multiple moments like that.
Yeah, and then after the Chris Fry, fake punt run, the plays that were called following that, is just, you got to go back and look at that. It's just been all year. I guess after a very disappointing year, and hard to believe we could fall like a rock like that, I just hope that it's time to sit down and review what we've been doing from top to bottom and make some changes. I totally agree with what Dave said. You know, you got to, as a coach, I would think, understand what you have for talent and put something in place that best suits that talent. And it looks to me like, you know, we're still thinking Le'Veon Bell is back there and Scott is a very good running back, but we're still running the same offense that we've run forever at Michigan State with minor few wrinkles. And I just think everybody's on to our game. How hard is that?
Yeah, you think MSU is kind of become, and you know, it doesn't help though when you have Tyler O'Connor just isn't an accurate quarterback, and that kind of that limits what you can do to a certain degree. Hear I'm coming from no time. I mean, how many times have we seen Tyler O'Connor just throw passes where it's just like, what were you thinking there? You know what I mean?
I hear you, but here's what I'm going to say to you. They know that was coming for 4 years,
right?
And what did we do with it? We still drop him back like he's Connor Cook, and he's trying to drive or throw these deep passes.
Right.
He's got to get rid of the ball. It's got to be a no-thought, 1-2-3 throw.
And I agree.
We can't do that. We can't hit our tight ends. We can't throw slants. We're doing these slow-developing plays. It's like, I'm no expert. Those guys know more than I do every minute of every day. But, man, oh, man, I can sit there and watch that stuff and say, but, you know, we're off kilter.
Yeah, I hear you, and we can only hope. I think we've seen shades of positivity from Brian Lewerke.
Yes,
I think
no
that
doubt.
Brian Lewerke, in that quarterback competition between Messiah DeWeaver, Damian Terry, and Lewerke, I think Lewerke may be that guy next year. Again, it's so premature to say that, but I have seen some things I like from Brian Lewerke. Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, Kamen, you want to bring up – first of all, I never heard of the whole – to make a possible bowl?
So it is a voting system. It still is selected by different committees. So
you
at
really
the end of the day,
MSU is going to make a bowl game?
I don't think they would deserve to, but at the same time, no, it's possible.
They wouldn't have gotten that, though. Let's keep it real. They wouldn't have got Kamen.
This is one of the things I was telling you before the show when we got into our disagreement about the whole 2-point conversion thing. You were saying they're 3-7, they don't have anything to play for. They were technically still bowl eligible.
Let's keep it real here.
They select teams with high APR, which is your academic progress rate. Michigan State has a very high academic progress rate and would have been one of the top 5-win teams selected. Whether D'Antonio accepts that or not, that's questionable. You know, maybe wanting to keep his bowl streak alive.
Kamen, I highly doubt. And they can still get, you know, win number 4 this week, and who knows? But I highly doubt.
Well, they could have had win number 5 if they kick an extra point.
Stop. Come on. You don't have any.
I have two.
What are they going to, the McDonald's Bowl or something? Even if they do go to a bowl game, and that bowl game is, it's going to be a, who cares?
I have two more gripes with you and Isaac's argument. You both say they go up 18-17. There's still 4:41 left and 2 timeouts. They don't guarantee win that game at all.
I hear what you're saying, dude. I hear everything you're saying. But at the same time, this college football team, and you have a golden opportunity to possibly take the lead in the fourth quarter in the weighing moments against the Ohio State Buckeyes, the number 2 team in the nation. I have no problem with you going for 2, okay? The problem came with the play call, and I'll leave it at that. Right now, we got to transition. Man, we only have 15 minutes left in today's show. Time flies when you're having fun. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to talk MSU men's basketball for a second here. Yeah, because that was a very, I don't even know the word to describe what occurred in the final 5 seconds of that game. First off, I want to give a big shout out to Aaron Harris because we finally have an Aaron Harris sighting. 31 points, for the senior guard. 6 of 6 from the three-point line. We've been waiting on this. Aaron, I mean, because it looked like, you know, when he was out in New York, I mean, he just looked lost.
He
like,
was in
lost
New York?
In space.
Yeah, he was in New York? Right.
His body was there.
Okay.
But his mind was still here chilling at the Briz, Isaac. I mean, he just looked totally out of it when he was out in NY. And, you know, Aaron, he's my X factor this year. If Aaron Harris can consistently give you somewhere close to 20 points a game, oh, my goodness. Sky's the limit for this team. Miles Bridges, I mean, he's going to get doubled. He's going to get honed in. Everybody knows how talented this young freshie is, and he had another game where he struggled. Miles Bridges was just 4 of 12 from the floor, 2 of 5 from the three-point line. He was your second-leading scorer with 13 points. Kenny Goins, you talk about somebody who was absent. Kenny Goins, I don't know where he was. I mean, my gosh, Kenny Goins. 0 points in that game. 0 of 1 from the floor. And as far as Florida Gulf Coast and their game plan coming into this game, I thought they had a fantastic game plan. I think that, you know, we talked about the lack of size for this MSU men's basketball team coming into this season. We talked about that a lot with the injuries to Ben Carter and Gavin Schilling. And so far, again, we're only talking about 4 games into the year here. But so far, Florida Gulf Coast, I believe, has done the best job in exploiting that size out of the three other teams that have played Michigan State so far this season. I mean, Simmons was fantastic, 8 of 14, 18 points for him. And the way that game ended, though, was so just puzzling, folks. I mean, you look at it, and Aaron Harris missed a pair of free throws. Free throw woes all day for this team. And they got it. If I'm Tom Izzo, they're shooting free throws all day. I mean, 19 of 33 for 57.6%. From the charity stripe. That I mean, if you make your free throws, if you shoot near 80%, you don't put yourself in this position to squeak out a 1-point win over Florida Gulf Coast, all right? But anyway, that's how the cookie crumbled. Aaron Harris missed a pair of free throws, giving the Eagles a final opportunity to win with 3.5 left. Freshman Miles Bridges swatted down the first inbounds attempt. That cut the clock from 3.5 to 1.6. The second attempt found the paws of Ontravius Simmons, who I just mentioned. He threw up a shot as the horn sounded. So the clock actually started as the ball was still sailing through the air before it got to the hands of Simmons. And Simmons, who I think reacted in panic because he heard the buzzer go off as soon as he caught the basketball, Simmons throws up a pretty good look, then air balls, game over. Controversial to say the least. And here's what head coach John Dooley had to say about that final play.
What was the explanation that you got at the end on the final play?
That he did not turn his, the referee did not have control of the clock. That by rule, if the ball had gone in, they could review it. And if it didn't, you can't review it. But he caught the ball at zero. So that's...
Do you think that the horn should have been taken into consideration then? The fact that the horn went off.
He said he shot it because he heard the horn go off. But when you can see on the tape that he caught it at zero. So that's what happened.
So the clock can't be reviewed?
The clock can be reviewed if the shot had gone in, which I don't understand. But that's the rule. Referees played the rule, which they have to, and I thoroughly understand that. Well, he was going to try to lay it in. I mean, if you could have, with one set, with 1-6, you got to dribble and a half. I mean, he dribbled to catch, dribble, and try to throw it.
So he
heard the horn and threw it.
And that just messed up his
plan. We told him we knew he had 1-6. It was 2-4, I believe, until the ball was deflected. Bridges did a great job getting up on the ball and deflected. It was 1-6, so that's a dribble. Said, so catch it and try to make it, catch it, and, you know, catch it, dribble it, or catch it and shoot it. And as soon as he caught it, he heard the horn, so he flipped it.
That is one of the most ridiculous rules I have ever heard of. It is, folks. I mean, if I'm Joe Dooley, I was shocked that Joe didn't flip a gasket when the referees, after that play, spoke to both Coach Izzo and himself. And Joe Dooley, he was fiery throughout that entire night. I was so shocked that Joe did not flip over a chair and storm into the crowd. I was shocked that Joe Dooley didn't go Ron Artest on the Breslin Center last night. Now, I just received in my email around 12:39 p.m. A statement from Men's Basketball Collegiate Officiating Consortium from Matthew Larson, who is the SID of the MSU men's basketball team. And I'll just read a snippet of it. Quote, while the on-court officials and Michigan State timekeeper have the ability to start and stop the clock after a complete review of the timing error on the game's final play with 1.6 remaining, it was confirmed that a game official improperly set the clock in motion via his precision timing belt pack, which looks like a utility belt that Batman wears. The subsequent education of the rules allowing for use of the courtside video monitor and a handheld digital stopwatch to determine whether the shot was released prior to expiration and if there was any time remaining in the game were properly administered according to the rules, which is ludicrous to me. Right now, I want to invite, with less than 9 minutes here left in the show, I want to invite DeShaun Tate, because I'm sure he has an opinion on this. College basketball reporter, producer, and columnist for CBS Radio. DeShaun Tate now joins us. DeShaun, first off, my man, how are you doing?
I'm okay, man. Al, thanks for asking. I tell you what, forget about an opinion. I'm going to tell you a fact. The fact is, if I'm Joe Dooley and DeShaun Tate is coaching Florida Gulf Coast right now, Al Martin's going to be on his way down to the bail bondsman to come and get me out of jail or something, as upset as I would have been after what we saw last night. Something that Michigan State shouldn't have been put in a position for in the first place. Always knew that Florida Gulf Coast was going to be a really good team. I mean, I thought obviously it would be a win for Michigan State, a tougher victory for them than they had a few nights ago against Mississippi Valley State. But nevertheless, it is still a tournament team, and it was a team that wasn't scared, and you've seen exactly that on yesterday.
Man, Florida Gulf Coast was so good last night, and they answered every Michigan State run. But how do you – I mean, have you ever heard of this rule before, DeShaun, that, you know, if the ball goes in, then you can review it. But if there's a shot clock error where a shot goes up and it doesn't, you know, find the bottom of the net – then you can't go back and look at it and possibly roll the play back. I mean, have you ever heard of that rule before? Because that was my first time.
I can't say that I have ever heard of that rule. There's been so many rule changes within the last few years that may have been one that I just so happened to have kind of skipped over or somehow it got away from me. But I think in the situation, in this scenario, that, you know, the play should have been able to be, you know, after being reviewed, be tried again, and I don't like to think that Florida Gulf Coast would have been successful with the play, trying it for the second time. Maybe Michigan State would have made some adjustments, but anything can happen here in college basketball. We don't have to wait until March to find out. Anything can happen sometimes. We've seen this on numerous occasions. If it is going to happen, it's going to happen from an experienced team like Florida Gulf Coast, and it typically will happen to the more inexperienced team production-wise that they have on the floor, which is Michigan State. I still think they should have had an extra opportunity at it. From what I've been told is that had the shot went in, regardless of the malfunction with the clock or who was controlling the clock, had the shot went in, then it would have counted as a made shot and a victory for Florida Gulf Coast. We wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's a huge disappointment for Michigan State, and they've really, really got to show me something on what I believe is Wednesday against St. John.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very true. And, of course, the battle for Atlantis out in the beautiful Nassau, Bahamas, hometown of course, Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Nearing Jr. Now, DeShaun, if you're Tom Izzo, and you kind of just alluded to your answer here in this question, but if you're Tom Izzo and you walk away from that floor and you look at the stat sheet, what do you think is going through Tom's head right now? And again, you get great effort from Aaron Harris, who, you know, as I stated, I've been waiting on a performance like that from Aaron, you know, in the first four games of the year, and we finally got one in game number four. But how do you feel about your team right now if you're Tom Izzo, and where do you start remedying the certain problems that have led to performances like we saw last night?
I'm not feeling comfortable if I'm Tom Izzo, and I'm not feeling confident. I think sometimes people rely on Tom Izzo a little bit too much, and a lot of Spartan fans have gotten kind of spoiled with the whole, well, let's just wait until March. We'll be a different team. If you've been listening to anybody in broadcasting and commentators and such, regardless of what network. That's what everybody's been saying. Well, wait until March when Izzo gets together. Wait until March. Well, that was the exact same thing that we heard around this time last year when Michigan State took some losses. And then you wait until March and everybody hang their hat on March Madness. And then next thing you know, you're losing, you know, one of the biggest upsets in history of NCAA tournaments. So I think that you really have to start tightening up these screws right now. The difficult part, obviously, when you were asking me about the stat line, obviously, turnovers has been a huge issue for Michigan State. And in addition to that, free throws, like you were talking about, I think maybe, what, 51% on yesterday. So, and those are seniors who are sending to the line. You talked earlier about a guy like Aaron Harris, who I believe with his struggles, sure, we can give him some credit for yesterday, but he should have been doing that. You're a senior here at Michigan State. Michigan State is relying a little bit too much on their freshmen and underclassmen. Everybody's going to be out for Bridges at the end of the day and know what he can and cannot do. So, you know, there's been a little bit too much emphasis being put on Miles Bridges and being able to be the leader. Michigan State had everybody's talking about this being the class. This is the class, the freshman class. Mm-hmm. And it is a great freshman class. Perhaps the best since they brought in Marcus Taylor and Zach Randolph. But Marcus Taylor and Zach Randolph didn't have to be the vocal leaders, the emotional leaders, the scoring leaders, all of those things that Miles Bridges and company have to be right now. Joshua Langford, he's still banged up. I mean, you talked a little bit about Goins. Goins is a plus. He's a bonus for Michigan State right now. He's not somebody you said, oh, we can rely on this net. They're relying on him a little bit too much. As you saw last night, that big man from Florida Gulf Coast gave him some problems.
We got less than a minute left with you, Deshaun. I want you to give us a preview of what you expect from this team as they head to Bahamas today to prepare for the battle for Atlantis. What are you looking forward to, and what do you know about St. John's?
I don't know a whole ton of a lot of St. John's. I mean, they did have some players that left that were key producers, some guys coming back as well. Obviously, Chris Mullen has done an exceptional job, still kind of getting over that hump. They lost an exhibition game to a NAIA or a D3 school last year around this time. So They're definitely bouncing back from that. They're not the same team, but I hope I see a lot more of Cassius Winston than I've been seeing out of Tum Tum Nairn, which is hard to imagine because they will be in his native home of the Bahamas. So just playing defense, going after the rebounds, get to Michigan State basketball, find a way to get Aaron Harris confident back in that jump shot, something we saw last night.
The one, the only, Deshaun Tate, college basketball reporter, producer, columnist, this all-around college basketball aficionado for CBS Radio. Deshaun, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, well, just less than 2 minutes left. Isaac, we can play the weekend winners music, and I know you want to bring up a moment, though, from the Raptors game.
Just real quick.
Yeah.
I just want to say, and this is what I'll go out with, but I didn't know food was in East Lansing was so good because that was some home cooking last night.
It was.
I'm totally
it was.
With everybody. Florida State should be entirely in jail for a Mouse at the Palace type repeat. That was ridiculous, unequal, judicious, and everything else. That was so unfair. I could not believe it. Same thing happened to the Toronto Raptors last night when Terrence Ross hit a buzzer-beating three-point shot as the clock expired. I'm happy that was the ref in the MSU game because I was about to get barred from future Breslin Center events. That's ridiculous. I'd be outraged. And you know what? I just cannot believe this Michigan State team is not 2-3 at the moment, or 1-3 at the moment. That was a horrible win. If you're proud of that as a Spartan fan, you should go into a mirror and smash it because that is outrageous. That's all I've got. Merry Thanksgiving, people.
There we go. Final show before the Thanksgiving holiday. Yes, we have to bid you all adieu. And I know Tom Izzo's not happy. I have a few weekend winners for you. How about Jimmy Johnson winning a record seventh Cup Series championship? Unbelievable. Also, Pewamo Westphalia and Jackson Lumen Christie are our two local teams that have booked the ticket to Ford Field. Congratulations to them as well. And the Detroit Lions, they keep on keeping on. That they will play a Vikings team that has an identical record, both teams sitting atop the NFC North. Be easy, people, and have a fantastic Thanksgiving. We'll see you.